begin to stand. Yes, sir, me. Where the painted peacock proudly spread his fans.
Joe, there's nothing wrong with your radio. Welcome back. That's the Jordan Rich Show. That voice belonged to a radio pioneer, an amazing career in radio and television. And if you're unfamiliar with the name Gene Shepherd, well, you'll be more familiar with him by the time this hour is over. Many, many, many of you who are not familiar with his radio work are familiar with one particular movie that continues to be one of those movies that you can't get out of your head. And it's a movie called A Christmas Story that is not only seen during Christmas time, but is seen in marathon format over and over and over again. And somehow it never, ever seems to get tired. Joining me on the line is the author of Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepherd. And he's done an amazing job here. His name is Eugene B. Bergman, and he joins us here on WBZ. Hey, Eugene, welcome. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm just fine. Excited about talking again about Shepherd.
Well, I'm excited to have you because I have a feeling that for those who are new to this subject, they'll be fascinated enough to hang in there and listen with us and also learn about a guy who really, I think, for me and for many of us, even though I wasn't able to hear him that much, I do know of him, transformed radio in his day. But let's talk about you. What you wrote a book here that is almost 500 pages long on this guy who did a radio show. I heavens to Betsy, don't think anyone will do that for me. But why, Eugene, are you so enamored with him?
Gene Shepherd was a true American genius. He basically invented the talk radio that we know today. Anyone who talks on radio is to some extent a descendant of what Shepherd did. He talked on the air without a script. He talked, he told many stories. He talked about just things passing through his head, the current scene, human foibles of all kinds. And he did it in a way that I like to say it tickled your mind. In other words, it really made you think. And it not only made you think and feel you were having an intellectual dialogue, but he was darn funny at the same time. He was a master.
We're going to talk a little bit about his background and the kind of person he was off the air, which makes him a complicated figure, no question. But you have done a remarkable job in this book in transcribing a lot of his monologues and a lot of his stuff. And I'm just curious how you got a hold of so much tape and how you were able to do the research.
There are actually over 1,000 of his broadcasts readily available. He did roughly 5,000 broadcasts from New York in 21 years, from 1956 basically to 1977. And these are available through websites, through eBay. Try Googling Gene Shepherd. You'll come up with quite a few. The main Shepherd website that has a tremendous amount of material about him, including ways to get tapes, is flicklives.com, FLICKLIVES.com. Right. Tremendous amount of material. They even have some audios of some of his shows archived right on that website. So it's out there and very easily available.
He got involved, as we'll find out, in all kinds of media, not just radio. Radio was his forte, but he got involved, I guess, in comedy albums and in television and certainly movies. And I mentioned the movie that everyone is familiar with, because
right.
Not only is it a great movie, it's hysterical, but it's his voice, it's his narration, and that is A Christmas Story. And isn't that towards the end of his, well, it's after his radio career, and he really falls into big money because of that, doesn't he?
Yes. His main radio career ended in 77, and they made that movie in 1983. And as he liked to say, from that movie, he got filthy rich at last.
I'm talking with Eugene Bergman, the author of Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepherd. And before we go any further, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to explain Excelsior, You Fathead.
Right. It was his favorite expression, and the expression that tens of thousands of his fans would repeat to each other. Excelsior in Latin means something to the effect of onward and upward to victory. It's sort of an idealistic battle cry. And Shepherd believed that you should try your best, but he also believed that you could be too idealistic and you'd better have your feet on the ground. So if you didn't have your feet on the ground after you cried Excelsior, you were a dummy or you were a fathead. So he, this phrase sort of encapsulates in a way his general feeling about life.
He was a rebel, even though, if obviously today radio rebels are the kind who just want to throw four-letter words around and be dirty and goofy and stupid, and then they wind up on satellite. But he was indeed a radio rebel, and let's explain why. Why was he given? Why did he have difficulty with sponsors? Why did he have difficulty with management? And why did the people love him?
In terms of being a rebel against management, he just didn't seem to be able to get along with too many people because he had his own sense of what he was and how the world should be. And he could be quite nasty towards the management of WOR in New York. When I say nasty, he would make fun of them on the air constantly.
Right.
And as far as sponsors, he would kid them too, sometimes mercilessly. Some of the sponsors must have hated it. A few of them apparently got a kick out of it and let him do it. But if he just didn't happen to have a special thing for a particular sponsor that he liked the product, he might just very easily be rather nasty. He would sing along, play his funny instruments, and make sort of derogatory comments about some of his sponsors.
The subject of our discussion here in this hour is Gene Shepherd, a radio legend for many, many years in New York, and of course people in other cities would tune in, as we often do, and people do it to BZ, of course, to listen late night, and that's where he was doing his thing. My guest is Gene Bergman, Excelsior, you fathead, the art and enigma of Gene Shepherd, and we'll go to calls very, very soon. I just need a little more time to sort of establish where we are here with this amazing character, very complicated man, Gene Shepherd. And he really did. Let's just talk a little bit about him before we talk about him in regular life, if you will. Let's just talk a little bit about how he did the show. He did the show on OR by himself. There wasn't a cast of characters except for the ones he made up. And pretty much told stories. How remarkable was his memory, and how important was that to his work?
Well, his memory was absolutely extraordinary for details, for what it was like to be a kid growing up in the Midwest. He was from Hammond, Indiana, right next to Chicago. And also his memory was extraordinary about his Army years, and pretty much anything that interested him, which was just about everything, he had an amazing memory. On the other hand, most people, when they first heard him tell his stories, assumed that they were true. He managed to give them such a sense of verisimilitude that people believed every word that he said was true. In later years, he said, no, it wasn't true. He made most of it up, and indeed we found out that the details of these hilarious stories that he told were pretty much mostly made up.
But does that bother you, a great fan of his, to know that he made a lot of them up? I mean, they were entertaining nonetheless.
Well, I certainly believed that what he was telling me was true way back in the 50s and 60s. However, he liked to say in later years that, are you just telling me that I have a good memory? You know, what kind of art is that? I'm a creator. Mm-hmm. And that's what I admire about him also, you know, the sense of the art of Gene Shepherd, the extraordinary ability he had to put together details and scenes that just live in your mind and in your memory.
Did he, to the best of our knowledge, come into the studio every night knowing pretty much where he was going? Did he use notes? Did he have a... I mean, he wrote a lot of stuff. I mean, he wrote for Playboy, and, of course, In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash is a well-known book.
Right, but, and those are actually stories that were published in Playboy, but he first told them without a script on the air.
So he really did. He was a master ad libber.
Yes, I spoke with a number of people who were really good friends of his and saw him in action, and they simply said that he never, ever had a script. The most he would have is maybe a little bit of a newspaper clipping or a couple of words written down to just indicate where he might be going that evening on the air. Some of his close friends said that he would sometimes corner them and before the program and just start talking, and then they would listen to his broadcast and they would hear parts of what he had been telling them person to person. So he he would think about what he might be saying, but it was never a script written down.
Talking about Gene Shepherd, the late Gene Shepherd, who was, for many of us in the business, one of those characters that we wanted to emulate and certainly admired from afar. Eugene Bergman wrote the book, Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepherd. It's probably gotten closer to Gene Shepherd than anybody else journalistically. We'll take a quick time out. We'll hear from Gene Shepherd, the words of Gene Shepherd, when we return, and take your calls next at 617-254-1030. This is Jordan on WBZ.
The Jordan Rich Show. Don't just listen. Call and contribute. 617-254-1030. WBZ News Radio 1030. Every day.
The invisible fence system? It's pure magic. I don't worry about my dog running away or getting hit by a car. And if perfect Patty next door never sees me chasing after Bailey in my PJs again, it will be too soon.
We tried everything for Max. He dug under the fence, tangled himself up in the run. The invisible fence brand worked.
I open the door and out Molly goes to play with the kids. It's changed my life. I wouldn't have a dog without one.
1-800-818-DOGS. Installed systems as low as $5.99.
Hello, this is Dr. Chuck Noonan. And as a veterinarian, I know that over 1 million dogs are hit by cars every year. Is your dog really safe? With the invisible fence system, you'll have total peace of mind. Your dog will be healthier, happier, and better behaved. 30 years of experience and the only brand to get the ASPCA seal of approval for electronic pet containment, it's the only brand I trust.
Call us before July 1st. Mention this ad to save $100 or ask about our $5.99 special. Financing available. 1-800-818-DOGS.
News is everywhere. Man and Beezy will be there. Man from Lynn out west to Air. Man, Cape Cod to Copsey Square. Man, you travel in the car, we're there. Man, 10:30's everywhere.
WBZ News, this breaking story.
We go to Attleboro, Middleboro, Barksboro, Barksboro, Shrewsbury, Newbury, Littleton, and Tewksbury, Wollaston, Holliston, Middleton, and Framingham, Gloucester, Worcester, Leominster, and Bellingham, Watertown, Provincetown, Nickytown, Orinda Town, Boston, Brockton, Bedford, Medford. Beezy's everywhere.
Everywhere, every day. WBZ News Radio 1030.
Do you know the secrets to eliminating bad breath? Well, now you can learn with a free copy of the Bad Breath Bible by Dr. Harold Katz, a leading expert in oral health. The Bad Breath Bible is the number one reference on bad breath. Find out how to get your free copy today while supplies last at 1-888-341-8844. Whether you're worried about occasional bad breath from garlic and onions, or if you have chronic halitosis due to dry mouth, food allergies, diabetes, or tonsils, the Bad Breath Bible has a solution for you. And if you call right now, you'll also receive a free 2-week supply of TheraBreath, a clinically proven remedy that will completely eliminate bad breath. There's a limited number of copies of the Bad Breath Bible available. So request yours today and learn the secrets to eliminating bad breath. You have nothing to lose but the bad breath. Plus, call right now and you'll also receive a free 2-week supply of TheraBreath. Dial 1-888-341-8844. That's 1-888-341-8844.
We have have an incredible opportunity for you right now at Mattress Discounters.
That's Lisa Evans.
Our all sizes one price sales event has just started, and it's exactly what it sounds like. Every size is the same price.
Twin, full, queen, king. Prices start at just $99. Even the king's three pieces start at just $99.
We've got a wide selection of mattress sets in every price and comfort level, including luxurious pillow tops.
Sealy, Simmons, Factory Direct, Back Care, Posturepedic, Beautyrest, Stearns and Foster. All sizes are the same price per piece, as long as you buy the complete set.
All sizes, one price, starting at just $99 right now at Mattress Discounters.
If you want to get the most for your money, stop into a Mattress Discounter Sleep Center today.
Have a good night's sleep on us. Mattress Discounters.
Mattress Discounters, all sizes, one price sales event. Get a queen or king size mattress for the same price you'd normally pay for a twin. Prices start at $99 each piece. Call 1-800-BUY-A-BED.
The only reason I ever talk about being a kid is not because, you know, it's not nostalgia. You wouldn't great, no, wouldn't it great being a kid and all that jazz? Because any legitimate walking around certified kid, you just stop any walking around certified guaranteed kid, and you ask them what it's like being a kid, and you'll get the straight dope. I mean, he's liable to kick you in the kneecap. So don't come around with his jazz, you know, how great it was. Nah, come on. It's not great being a kid. This is just a fact. It is not. It is not great not being a kid. In fact, let's put it this way. It's not great being anything, really. You really boil it right down to the...
Well, there you go. Gene Shepherd, a little clip there. And we're talking with Eugene Bergman, who's written Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepherd. There was a very nice review in The Globe a few weeks back, by the way, by Dan Wakefield. And the book is amazingly thorough. And Eugene, before we go to our callers, that little clip is interesting because it does sort of indicate, in a funny way, his lack of optimism about the human experience to a certain extent.
Yes, you know, the general feeling that one gets listening to his programs is a great joy in life, wanting to experience all of it and having a wonderful time in all aspects of life, intellectual and sports and all kinds of activities. And yet there was always this undercurrent I guess you could call it pessimism, that, mm-hmm. you know, where things weren't necessarily going to always work out the way we would want or expect.
Now, he did have a rather, well, I don't want to say tumultuous, but a difficult life personally in terms of women and relationships. I know he had close friends, but he was a complicated guy. He wasn't the warm, lovable radio guy and the warm, lovable guy off the air, was he?
No, and... people are rather upset when they find out about that, but it was a definite part of what he was. And basically, I found out about some of the rather unpleasant aspects of his nature when I began to interview people who knew him, and found that indeed he could be rather unpleasant, not only, as I mentioned, to his sponsors and his radio management on the air, but sometimes to the people around him, the people he knew, and sometimes the people he loved.
Right. Let's take some phone calls. My guest, again, is Eugene Bergman. It's a terrific read. It's called Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma, and that's part of this discussion right now of Gene Shepherd. And thank you, Michael in Maryland. I appreciate you waiting. I'm sorry I kept you waiting. You're on WBZ.
That's okay. I grew up around New York, so I used to listen to Gene Shepherd. And I was wondering, when you first came on, I was talking to the producer, so I may have missed a part of this, but who has custody of all the Gene Shepherd archives? Because there are about 2,000 tapes that exist, and he's talked about that.
Well, in terms of the tapes, it's unclear how many tapes he may have left. However, the interesting thing about Shepherd is that... he had so many dedicated fans who just couldn't get enough of him that hundreds of them made their own recordings off the air, as I did. And it's these hundreds and hundreds of recordings that are circulating around today. In terms of who has the archives. He willed much of, or most of his material to a close friend of his in Florida where he died. A few other people have some items, but the tapes themselves are simply widely available. We're always hoping that more will show up.
I know that some of the WOR archives are at Syracuse University, where I went to college. And, of course, there's a large collection at the Library of Congress.
Would you both say that when you tuned in, and I didn't get a chance to hear him that often because of being in Boston and being younger at the time, but when you tuned in, you were expecting another, in a sense, novel that he would unleash in his program, another gem? Because it seems as though the followers of his were rabid and they wanted to tape a lot of his shows.
I don't know what I was expecting. I just remember that it seemed almost that he would get on the air and talk, and that he would talk about. And there is, I don't think there is anybody who can come close to what he did, with the possible exception of Garrison Keillor.
Interesting. Would you like to comment, Eugene, on Michael's point that what he did was relatively unique for not only its day, but for certainly now? I mean, no one really comes close to that kind of performance on radio.
Well, I agree totally. Nobody does what Gene Shepherd did. And although he told many stories, much of his broadcasting was simply amusing commentary, playing some of his weird little instruments and kind of kidding around, various comments on the passing scene and anything that passed through his mind, and then maybe the program would evolve into a longer or shorter story, or maybe it wouldn't. You never knew really what was going to happen on any particular broadcast. The one person, as was mentioned, Garrison Keillor, who he's sometimes compared with, in the beginning, Shepherd seemed to appreciate that Keillor was doing something interesting on the radio, but eventually Shepherd began to resent the fact that Garrison Keillor was getting so much more publicity than he, Shepherd, ever got, and that was because of the nature of syndication and networks that Shepherd fell between the cracks. When the old networks were falling apart in the 50s under the onslaught of television, and before the new syndication and networks really took hold.
And before satellites.
Yes. And before satellites. So Garrison Keillor managed to be able to get a far greater audience because of that technological aspect of radio than Shepherd could in his day. And also, Garrison Keillor, from what I understand, is basically scripted. He's very good, but he does not really do the kind of extemporaneous jazz-like improvisation that Shepherd did every night on the air.
I've read that the Lake Wobegon monologues are unscripted, but I'm not sure. I just have one quick question. What did you think of Gene Shepherd's America and Shepherd's Pie, the two TV series that he did?
Well, I do think that his greatest achievement was in radio, but
I think
Gene Shepherd's America, which was a series of about 23 half-hour television shows, was what I like to think of as a little bit of a part of a mosaic of America. That Shepherd, if he could have only kept up and done, say, hundreds of these, he would have had an incredible mosaic of American culture, American modern culture. And it ended up being basically parts of a masterpiece. And many of these were done without a script also. Mm. Can you imagine doing half-hour television programs basically without a script?
One I remember was where he went to a steel plant because he had worked at a steel plant as a kid, and he went to one and was talking about, and they still hold up. I'm blind, so they still hold up, you know, as non-visual pieces too.
Right. Michael, I've got to hold you there. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it, Michael. Thank you. he made a good point there at the end, how Shepard's use of words and dialogue in monologue really was great. It was theater of the mind. And what about this idea that he sort of linked the golden age of radio with the current contemporary style of radio, in that he created characters and ideas and images well after or shortly thereafter the golden age of the radio sitcom and the radio soap opera sort of petered out. He was the bridge.
Well, in the sense that before him there were all of these interesting and amusing and serious stories of longer and shorter length that were a real art form unto themselves, and Shepard really appreciated what had been done in that golden age of radio, and he felt that radio was such an extraordinary medium, and he managed to do what he did without anybody else in the studio, basically just with his own voice and his own imagination. So he did form a bridge between the old golden age and what came after.
We're going to take another time out, quick one, and we'll come back with more calls for our guest. His name is Eugene Bergman. The book, Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepard, a Radio Legend. We'll come back with your calls next as we continue here on WBZ.
We see it in the movies, but how many times have we ever witnessed to it actually in real life? You actually see a heroic act. Well, I can remember Schwartz yapping like some kind of insane hyena all around Flick's kneecaps. When Flick walked up, I will always remember Flick for this. He walked right up to that telephone pole. He stuck his tongue out. And he had a standard kid tongue, you know. He stuck his tongue out, and he looked around at Schwartz and says, "All right, watch this." He stuck his tongue out again. He laid it on that. He says, that's all kid talk. I have tongue don't stick. He stuck his tongue out, and zap!
There it is. That was, of course, what a lot of people heard as the narration, ultimately, in the movie A Christmas Story, the famous sticking of the tongue to the cold pole, and we all know what happens after that. We're talking about Gene Shepard, the late Gene Shepard, radio pioneer, and in a new book called Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepard. You'll learn all about him and much more from Eugene Bergman, who's my guest on the line. We'll go to calls in just a second. By the way, Eugene.
Yes.
Before we go to calls, and we have a friend of mine and yours, Ron DeLaChiesa, on the line in a sec. Do you know Norm Nathan? Know that name?
No, the name sounds slightly familiar.
Norm was a mentor of mine, a great friend, and worked here at BZ for 10 years in broadcasting in Boston for 50. He and Gene sounded a lot alike. Their voice patterns were very similar. And Norm was sort of our own homespun Gene Shepard type, who did tell stories and who had that way about him, that beautiful, you know, tickling people through the night kind of way. And I didn't know if you had known much about Norm. He was a New England favorite. But he always, the voices are even similar, that he's talking right into your ear. It's really lovely. Let's say hello to Ron DeLaChiesa, another Boston radio legend and a good friend. Hey, Ronnie.
It's good to be with you guys. And Eugene, I had the pleasure of interviewing on my show, and I'm so glad that you got him on, Jordan, because, you know, Gene Shepard was one of the great iconoclasts and wits that radio has produced, and an enigma, if ever there was one. But what he did on the air, nobody, I don't think, will ever be able to touch it. He was a true genius.
Ronnie, you tell me, and you can tell Eugene the story about, well, when he was coming to Boston to do some work at Channel 2, and you, of course, have been Channel 2 so many years, you had a chance to hang with him, have dinner with him. What was he like?
Nonstop. I mean, nobody could out-talk Shepard. He could corner anybody. I mean, even a waiter, you know. A waiter would come over, and he'd do a whole bit. Just, he'd do his show, and he was a master of one-upmanship. No matter what you said, he did it, or knew somebody who did it, or was related to the incident in some way. I remember once I said, my wife Joyce was wearing a certain fragrance of perfume, and he got in the car, and his wife Lee, by the way, and I know Eugene knows this, she was really a strong force behind him. She was really his producer and the person who put it all together for him behind the scenes. But anyway, my wife was wearing this kind of perfume, and Lee said, "What kind of perfume is that, Joyce?" And she said, "It's J. Revien." Without missing a beat, Shepard turned around and says, "You know, I know the guy that invented that." No.
He was really right there. And I guess Eugene, Ronnie's talking about him, you know, in social circles. Was he always on? Was he the kind of guy who, according to other friends, was always on? Or was he subdued and like a lot of guys, sort of quiet and unassuming in some cases?
Well, just as Ron said that he was always on, other people that I interviewed said the same thing. For example, Barry Farber, the broadcaster who was a close friend of Gene's at WOR, said he was Gene Shepherd 24 hours a day. He never changed. He was always the same. So I heard that from quite a few people.
Ronnie, you and I have been friends for many, many years, and I have the utmost respect for you. And we had lunch, Ronnie and I and Jess Kane and John Henning. Man, that was a fun lunch. But as I sat around with you guys, you know, we were talking about Gene Shepherd and Norm and some of the real storytellers. And Ron, if you would, you grew up in Quincy, and you grew up listening to radio as I did late at night. What was the magic of Gene Shepherd for you? I mean, in terms of the stories, how did it really affect you personally?
You know, when you're a kid, you can be very self-conscious, very conspicuous, very lonely. And what Gene did was made you feel that you were a part of a huge family. And he went one-on-one with you so that, you know, you're up here in a room, you listen to this guy. And I discovered him, as Eugene did, by accident. And you want to meet the guy. I mean, there's nobody who is doing this kind of stuff. And he would talk nonstop for, you know, 3 or 4 hours and then play jug bands and, you know, Jelly Roll Morton jazz behind him. He was a great authority on jazz. He played the Jew's harp. He was really a guy who was, you know, he could weave stories like Mark Twain in a way. I mean, it was, yet he was unusual in that he came from, as Eugene said, Hammond, Indiana. And he said, I went to the Warren G. Harding School, named after one of the worst presidents of all time. I mean, he was very cynical and very dark, yet he could lift you right up, you know.
Yeah.
And he was like a jazz musician, a great swinging jazz musician. He could do with words what Dizzy Gillespie could do with a trumpet.
Well, that's a great description, isn't it, Eugene?
Yes, and in fact, especially in his the early days in New York in the 50s, he was very into the modern jazz scene. He wrote articles for a magazine on jazz. He was the narrator and MC of several major jazz concerts with the biggest names of the day: Billie Holiday, Charles Mingus, everybody. He was out there introducing them, talking about them. I attended one in Central Park in New York, where he was the MC and the star was Billie Holiday. So he was really into jazz and the nature of improvisation. So he played jazz music on the air, and his style was influenced by jazz itself.
Well, we have a lot of callers here. Ron, thanks for joining us, and your impressions of Gene are really, really appreciated.
Well, you know, the other thing about Gene is that a lot of his material showed up in, I think the cynicism came from the fact that a lot of comedians and people who listened to him nightly used his material, and it showed up later. For example, Woody Allen's Radio Days. I mean, that's pure Shepherd, you know. And
yeah.
Network, of course, Eugene talks about that in the book. Network was a direct lift from Gene Shepherd, you know, hurling invectives in the night. So these callers I know are going to be very interesting to listen to because everybody has a Shepherd story.
Thanks, Ronnie. Take care.
It's a pleasure. Great.
Good night. That's a good friend of mine and yours. Many people love him, and why not? He's terrific. Ron Della Chiesa. Let's continue with calls. Manny is next. Hey, Manny, welcome. You're on the air with Eugene Bergman, author of the book Excelsior, You Fathead. Go ahead.
First of all, happy anniversary, Ron and Joyce.
Yeah, he just signed off, but thank you.
Okay.
I'll thank you for him. Go ahead.
You're welcome. Eugene, did Shepherd take calls or not in that stage at any point of his career, or was it a one-man thing, no call-ins?
There were virtually none. However, in the 50s, he would occasionally have somebody call in to respond to some question that he had. Usually you would just hear Shepherd talking. On very rare occasions, you would hear a couple of words of the caller. It could have happened in the 60s, too.
Right.
However, in the in the 50s, there was one particular person who called in, and she and Shepard got involved in a conversation, and she would call back from time to time, and she became known as the listener or the caller. Well, eventually, Shepard and she met, and she was the aspiring actress at the time, Lois Nettleton, whom he eventually married.
Yeah, very good-looking lady, by the way.
Yeah. When I first heard him back in the 50s, I said to myself, I don't know if this guy is going to make it. Did you have that feeling when you first heard him?
Well, of course, I wasn't thinking of that one way or the other. All I knew was that he totally captivated me.
Now, well, he did himself, in a way, but I mean with his cynicism and his overall... in other words, if he were a talk show today, I think he'd be compared to Michael Savage and Drudge, basically. And, of course, that was another time in our lives. But he was so innovative and so brilliant. Eventually, I got to say, yeah, maybe I was wrong. And I was wrong because he certainly made it.
Well, let's talk for a second about that. Who would he compare to today, if anyone, Eugene, in your estimation? Is there anyone besides, we mentioned Garrison Keillor, besides him on a national radio basis who's doing the kind of stuff that Shepard did? I can't think of anybody.
I don't think anybody does that kind of thing. As I think I mentioned before, I think that anyone on talk radio somehow is a descendant of what Shepard did, but nobody does what he did. Just... extemporize on every subject under the sun without a script and with such insight and humor nightly. Nobody does it.
Hey, Manny, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Take care. 617-254-1030. We have time for another call on the subject. Gene Shepard, the late Gene Shepard, most well known in terms of the pop culture for the amazing movie that still just has legs. And literally, legs like that leg that becomes the lamp. My Christmas Story. Sally in Brookline. Welcome, Sally. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I used to listen. This is not a favorable call about Gene Shepard. I used to listen to him when I was in his area and was enchanted with the stories. I loved them. And I would say about 20 years ago, 19 years ago, he was on with David Brudnoy.
Yes, here in Boston. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was living in the area, and I called up, and I said, Gene, I used to listen to your stories. I loved them. I especially loved the story about the mystery package. Do you remember that? He said, no. And then he said, and this is the thing that turned me off, he said, but you're going to tell it anyhow, aren't you? And at that point, I hung up.
Well, let me get a comment. Hang on, Sally, because I think a very important aspect of this is how he treated and felt about the fans. And those of us who do this, I can tell you from personal experience, I am so in awe of the people in the audience and what they have to bring to what I do. And I love them, but it can be a different story with different personalities. What was he like regarding the fans, Eugene?
Well, of course, he knew he needed fans. Sometimes they would indeed annoy him. However, this caller is talking about him in roughly 1985, which was...
Somewhere around there, yeah.
About 8 years after he left radio, and he was very bitter when he left radio, that the medium had not been able to sustain and encourage his genius the way he believed it should have. And he was going on to other things, the movie A Christmas Story, television work, and indeed, whenever the subject of radio came up from one of his fans, he would be rather resentful because he would feel that they were somehow negating his more recent work, and he wanted always to be thinking in the present rather than to dwell on the past, especially a past of a radio which, for him, had become something that did not deal as well with him as it should have. So I think that was a large part of why he could be rather negative and nasty when anyone brought up his old radio work.
Well, it was a complete turnoff to me. And when I hung up, I said, I bet you made up all those stories. And after years of enjoying them, yeah. I said, oh, it's a crock.
Interesting feedback. Thank you, Sally.
Right.
Thank you. Well, that makes it such a story worth writing about, because there is much more to the individual, and you write about him in great detail. It's a fabulous insight into my business. This is why I think a lot of guys like me are reading it, and other people are reading it because they were fans or they were just curious, and it's a remarkable work, and I do give you credit, Eugene, for doing your homework.
Well, I do believe that what the story of Gene Shepherd is all about is something more than just for his fans. It's for people interested in radio, interested in American humor. He was a great lover of America. He criticized it to some extent, but he was a great fan of America, and he loved it very much, and he loved to kid about it and just talk in general about it. So people interested in American culture and a major creative force in the mid-20th century. That's what Gene Shepherd was.
We are out of time, and I appreciate it. Eugene, thank you very much for joining us. Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepherd by Eugene B. Bergman. And it's a great book. Do pick it up and enjoy it. More in a moment on WBZ.
Guests, entertaining topics, and intriguing questions. This is the Jordan Rich Show on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Well, I enjoyed that last hour with Eugene Bergman talking about Gene Shepherd, a name that many of you may not be familiar with, but you've all seen A Christmas Story, and that was kind of fun. And just one more note, I did mention Norm Nathan, who for many, many, many years, over 50 years, was a voice here in New England on Boston radio, including WBZ. And he taught me a lot. He taught me a lot about the business, not knowingly. He didn't consciously sit me down and teach me these things, but just on how to communicate as best we can in an intimate fashion. This is the most intimate of mediums, and we really appreciate the opportunity to do what we do and come to you on a regular basis. Coming to you next is Morgan White Jr. He'll be filling in for Steve, who's off tonight, and he'll have a great show, as he always does when he fills in. I want to say thank you to Jim Grenier for producing tonight's program, and invite you to join us next weekend and throughout the summer for some good shows on all kinds of topics, and we get you involved as much as we can, and at least care to make life a little bit better and bring a smile. That's the idea. So you can check WBZ1030.com or visit my website, JordanRich.com, JordanRich.com, for links to all the things you heard about tonight and details and so forth and so on. Again, congratulations to all the graduates of high school. We had our big party last night, still full, but it was worth every single morsel. Take care, graduates. This is Jordan saying, as always, be well, do good. Good night, good morning, God bless you, and God bless America. Stay tuned next for Morgan White Jr. I'll be filling in for Steve Lavelli here on WBZ News Radio 1030.